Okay, good evening, everyone. We are in our third class on Olam Haba, and we're in the middle of a piece that's called What Happens Before, During, and After Your Lifetime. So we've said there were four stages that the soul goes through. We're in the middle of the third stage. We've left right in the middle on point 16. That's in, you're not going to have the same pagination as me, but where it says phase three, right, there's phase one, phase two, phase three, and we're up to point 16,
okay,
where this is after you have died, and now you are going into the world of souls. Okay, so we discussed a bit of it, so we're going to continue where we left off, and okay, so now after the person leaves this world, the soul, which remember started in the heavens, started under the throne of God, it returns back to its source. And together with any type of godliness that it was able to bring out in the physical world by using it in the way Hashem wanted him to use it. Okay, so the soul comes back after doing its job, hopefully, and now it relives those experiences that it had while on this earth, but in a different plane of existence, and now is really able to appreciate the good that it accomplished in its physical lifetime, because a lot of the barriers that existed when you were in planet Earth that shielded the soul from appreciating it and you from appreciating it, now that's all removed. So now you can really get the intense pleasure of all the good things that you did in this world. And whatever you're going to receive, you're going to in the next world, whether it be pleasure and or the pain you get, are not viewed merely as a reward or a punishment the way we understand a reward and a punishment. Someone does something wrong, you punish them, does something good, you reward them. But it's rather your soul now experiencing the reality that it created in its lifetime, now in a purer sense, and is able to appreciate the reality of what it has accomplished. You got it? The soul comes down into this world as a body. There's a lot of lack of clarity when you're in this world. When you're doing mitzvahs, you don't necessarily hear the music that you're playing. You don't necessarily hear if you're off tune and off key and messed up the whole orchestra while you're doing it, or you don't know how Mamish made an amazing recital. And now when you're able to hear what you've happened, so it's not a question of Hashem coming after you and punishing you or giving you this great reward. It's you now experiencing the true reality of what you created in your lifetime, or as we say, you're putting up the volume and you're hearing that symphony. If it's a beautiful symphony, you'll have a lot of intense pleasure. And if it was a horrible symphony, you're going to have a lot of pain. So this, I mean, we'll talk more about this in another class. I'm just giving you the general ideas over here. The Talmud says there's a concept of Gehenom, where this is where it can happen after you die and you go into the world of souls. And they talk about these aspects of Gehenom. It talks about the most that a person can have in Gehenna, if you're a real Russia, is 12 months. Whatever 12 months mean in a reality like that, but on planet Earth, for us, it appears to be 12 months. So there's a Gehenna fire. There's 6 months of a Gehenna fire and 6 months of a Gehenna of coldness. So the expression of hell freezing over is a very true concept. It's not a joke. Hell does freeze over for 6 months. And the idea being that when you've done things with your passions in the wrong way, let's say your anger or hatred, yelling and screaming, or passions for things you shouldn't be doing, so you're gonna feel the heat. You know, when you're yelling and screaming at somebody, you can already feel that your blood pressure is high. You're feeling a little bit heat. That's only in the physical world. Imagine what you're going to experience when the body is removed and you get to the essence of that fire. That is what the fire, whatever that means, you will be feeling of what you have done. You've created the fire or the coldness, your aloofness to spiritual realities. When there was an opportunity to do a mitzvah, you didn't do the mitzvah and you were very cold to it. You will feel the coldness in the most intense way when you're in that reality. So that's where what you do is going to be more experienced in a fuller way when you're in this world. Okay, now obviously, when the soul leaves the body, it's going to stand before Hashem's court, and there'll have to be what we call a judgment and an accounting of your entire life, which we'll talk more about it another time. Could be next week. So what goes on is Shemayim does the accounting. What does that mean? It brings to your conscious reality what you did. Now, I'm sure, you know, people, somebody reminded me this morning, you know, that I was the... I was the kvater at their son's bris 11 years ago, and I said, "I, you know, I'm sure I did, but I don't remember it at all. Like, I just don't remember it at all." That's fine. And there's many things we don't remember at all. So the accounting reminds you of it all. So now, you know, you don't remember, you know, how nicely or not nicely you played your music 25 years ago. So the accounting is you're going to see exactly how you played it. You're going to see exactly how, that's the accounting part. What do you need an accountant for? You don't know, you have a business, you're buying, you're spending this shit. You can't keep track of what you're doing, right? Or did I make money? Did I make? I know I spent a lot of money. I made a lot of money going back and forth. I have no idea. So an accountant, all the accountant does is say, this is how much money you spent. This is when you spent over here. This is when you spent over here. This is when you saved over here. This is when you bought this and that and that. Fine. The accountant doesn't really determine any judgment of you. So there's a cheshbon. So Hashem makes the cheshbon. He shows everything to you and exactly the way it was. That is the accounting. Now, the judgment part is only what the soul can do. Because the soul now passes judgment on itself because it really knows how amazing it was, and can sense the amazingness of it, what it did, or it will sense the neglect and the terrible things that it did. It will see it before its eyes in an unfiltered way, and that itself will cause it great anguish or great pleasure. So it's not Hashem coming in with a stick and beating you up in Shemayim and putting you into a fire and burning you up or playing pleasant music to you. It's going to be coming from you. It's going to be your reality because you don't have any of these limitations. So now you can see the spiritual realm for what it is. And when you made a bracha with kavana one day and you didn't really know if it accomplished anything, I mean, you made brachas today. Do you really feel you accomplished something? You have no idea. You do it because Hashem tells you to do it. You try to have a little more kavanah. But then when you see what really happened in the next world, when you had real kavanah, you go, wow, I did that? Oh, yeah, you did that. Oh, that's gewaltic. And then if, God forbid, you didn't make a bracha, then you see how negative that was, and you really feel terrible that that's what happened. So now you're really being able to really view your life exactly the way it is based on what you did. So that's really what's happening to one extent as we're going into this phase three reality. Now there is a place, as it were, called Gan Eden in Shemayim, and that's where you're going to experience all the positive actions, and in the most enjoyable way. Okay? Now, this and this place, when you're going into Gan Eden, and this is what we call the waiting room, so to speak, where you get a taste of what that infinite, infinite pleasure will be when we're going to get to the world after this, which is coming up in stage four. So you're really getting a good taste of, this is tremendous, right? But it's only a taste, even, of what's still yet to come when it reunites with the body. And here's the critical point. I'm going to say this point a million times over this course.
Gan Eden and Olam Haba are not the same?
It's a question of semantics. It's a question of semantics. So it doesn't really... Olam Haba is the world to come. There's many ways of looking at what Olam Haba is. This is part of Olam Haba. Okay? There's a more fuller Olam Haba still coming. So if you want to be technical, we could call it, this is the Olam HaNeshamos, the world of souls. Okay? So the degree of pleasure you'll get in Gan Eden in the world of souls is based entirely of what you did in your lifetime. Okay, that's why knowing what Olam Haba is makes a big difference as to how you deal with your Olam Hazah. That's the point over here. Now, Gehenna is the opposite. You're experiencing the destructiveness that you did, and that's going to be experiencing tremendous pain of Gehenna. And that truth of that destructiveness is painful to the soul, and at the same time, it cleanses and heals the soul as well. Okay? Now, flipping back on the other side, the soul, which has a tremendous power of sending energy and able to, for lack of a better word, to exercise its potentials, which can't always be done in this world, and certainly not to the full extent that the soul is able to experience the divine. Once it's removed from the body, it's able to experience this closeness to Hashem in the most incredible way, and the soul is, so to speak, ready to grow. The soul grows in this Olam HaNeshamos. Again, so the soul starts off stage one, this nice little soul that's enjoying being close to Hashem, but hasn't really earned anything. Comes down into this world, and now it works hard to earn all the spiritual growth it's able to accomplish. And then when it comes to the Olam HaNeshamos, it's able to now totally re-experience that reality and grow and become much more powerful. And it'll prepare itself for stage four is when it reunites with the body at a later date. Now, of course, generally speaking, the soul does far more good in its lifetime than evil. Okay, the core of your soul is unbelievably good, and what we do are eternally great things. In other words, we really have things stacked in our favor. When good is a true reality of Hashem, evil, so to speak, is a faux reality. So whatever evil you do can never be that real and that permanent. Whatever good that you do is real and is permanent. So the good things that you do as a Jew, that is going to remain forever. The evil has a reality, but a limited reality. So the full brunt of the evil you created can at most be experienced only in the 12 months of Gehenna. So whatever negative experience is going to happen in the next world, by and large, there's exceptions to the rule, but I would assume that everyone in this rule is part of the by and large, that anywhere from a minimum, everyone gets a little Gehenna. Even if you're a tzaddik, even a tzaddik, as he goes to Gan Eden, may have to pass over. It's not a physical thing. I'm just using physical terms. Pass over Gehenna, where maybe some of his students are, and gets a little singe as he goes over. As he's flying over, gets a little scorch. That's something. And some, whatever, because, as King Solomon said, there isn't somebody who did good and didn't do bad. At worst, if you're a Russia, it's 12 months. Now, unless you've done things that totally take you out of the pale of Judaism, you don't believe in 13 principles, that's another discussion for another time. But the worst it could be is 12 months. So then what's left? Well, what's left is the good. The good that you have is going to remain forever. So you're always on a good track eventually. Even a Russia, as the Gemara says, even the Jews that are wicked, they're like the pomegranate. We're full of mitzvahs. We still have mitzvahs. Now, obviously, the Russia does not have as many mitzvahs as the Tzaddik. Okay, so the tremendous positive experience that he gets in Olam HaNeshamos will be much less than that experience that the Tzaddik gets. Okay, now, you had a question? Somebody had a hand up? No?
I have a question. Yeah. What's the purpose of the soul reuniting with the body in Olam Haba?
We're going to get to it. We haven't gotten there yet. So I'm not going to answer it. But I will. Today, we'll get answered. Yeah?
I'm having a hard time understanding how evil is short-lived and temporary.
Because evil has no permanent reality. Hashem is only good. Hashem creates evil through the absence of good. And that is a phony reality that can only last so long. It doesn't come from a real positive source. It comes from a lack of good. So it doesn't run on reality, on an infinite reality. That's just the way it works.
So even if a person does or doesn't ask for forgiveness, even if a person does or doesn't do tshuva, you're going to say that it just kind of melts out at the end?
Yeah, but it's going to be a lot more Gehenim for someone who doesn't do tshuva than someone who does do tshuva. Okay? In other words, for every negative behavior that you do, it creates a certain negative reality. It creates negative reality within you. It does something not good to your soul. It does something to the reality of the world. And it has to be repaired. And it can be repaired and must be repaired till the evil is, as we say, extinguished. So the best trick in the book is to do tshuva and go through a emotionally trying, painful experience of tshuva. If you look in Rabbeinu Yonah, there's 20 steps to tshuva. It's not as easy as just showing up to shul on Yom Kippur and beating your chest. It's not that easy. So there's a certain amount of pain that you go through, and it's able to clean it out. Again, you can clean out almost everything you've done bad in your life. Almost. I'm sorry? That's coming up. That's coming up. That's coming up to the next point. Now, yes? One second. I don't have peripheral vision.
Will that memory all be washed out?
No.
So you'll see the evil people that you knew in this world will be back.
We're going to talk again, say your question, focus, please. I'm trying
example,
to.
But like a Hitler, are we going to see a Hitler?
Oh, yeah. When the big day comes, the big day comes, Hashem's bringing him back and he's roasting him in front of everybody.
No, but that's different than what you said before, where the person's.
But it'll be all cleaned out. So when we see him back here, he'll be sitting beside us. Will that all be cleansed out when everybody's resurrected again?
No,
you said it's all
Jewish people, yeah, it's going to get cleaned out. The evil will be cleaned out.
The Jewish people, Hitler did such terrible.
We're talking about Jews now, right?
Okay, Jews.
The real, real bad people, Hitler, Nebuchadnezzar, all these people, Hashem saving them, saving for the big barbecue at the end. Because we have to see ultimate justice. God has to show ultimate justice. And when the world comes to its ultimate perfection, the really wicked people got to be destroyed in front of everybody, as it should be, as it should be. But your standard garden variety Jew, who has done his share of bad things and his share of good things in the world, so Gehenna is where it really is going to hurt, as it were. Then it could get cleaned out, and a lot of that negativity can be removed. There's still going to be some aspects of it which we may touch on today, but a lot of that is gone. Yeah, yeah.
Even the Shema can be cleansed through going through Gehenna, worst case in 12 months. Why do you need reincarnation?
Why do we?
Why do
we didn't get there yet.
Okay.
We're going to get there. We're going to get there.
Okay.
Okay, now. Next. Now, a soul's experience in Gehenna through and can be mitigated by the action of his or her children and loved ones here on planet Earth. Because the Talmud says that a child is an extension of the parent. So when a person leaves this world and he leaves children, or for that matter, students or people who have been very much touched and influenced by his life. But a child is the highest level. Not that if you don't have children, you can't have it. But obviously the greatest way is if a child does good deeds. Because generally speaking, they get attributed to the parent. Generally, I mean, they are. No matter what you're going to say, you know... let's say you weren't in the mood to do anything religious today, but your hands happen to put on tefillin. You're not going to say you didn't get a reward for putting on tefillin? Some kind of reward you get. You created a child. So great. So that is you. If you like it or not, that is an extension of you. Even if you, let's say, were a crummy role model of a parent. Like, terrible. And the kid learned not to be like you. Okay? But the kid is still doing good things. It's going to accrue benefits because it still brought this child into the world. And therefore, if that child does amazing things, this can accomplish a lot to mitigate not everything, but can certainly lower the temperature significantly in that Gehenna. You know, that's why, you know, the idea of reciting the Kaddish is so important. Because if this person, I'm not assuming any of our parents are Rishonim. I'm just giving an extreme example. Let's say a person's father was a Rosh, and Hashem's got plans for him. 12 months of intense spiritual purification, okay? If the kid is saying Kaddish and doing good things, he's going to lower the temperature a lot. And that gives a lot of benefit. That's why people say Kaddish. When you are publicly sanctifying God's name so many times a day, that is accrued to the soul that left. But I have to hasten to add that is really, people overplay the significance of Kaddish. What I mean, I'm not minimizing significant Kaddish, but people overestimate its value and underestimate other values. They tell the story of it was brought in the Kitzer Shulchan Aruch. They bring the story of a fellow who only had daughters, and he was getting on in age, and he knew soon he's going to die. So he went to a rabbi and said, you know, how am I going to get any merits when I leave this world? I don't have any Kaddish zogers. No one's going to say Kaddish. If you pay someone to say Kaddish, it's not the same if a child says Kaddish. So what's going to happen to cool things off for me? So he said, if a child will, during the year that you're in being judged, choose an attribute, that a midah that they need to improve in, and they change this attribute, it accomplishes much, much more than Kaddish. Because Kaddish is good. I'm not minimizing Kaddish, and you should certainly say Kaddish, but it's the tip of the iceberg of what a child can do to make it much better. So if the child decides to learn Torah every day, that normally he wouldn't learn Torah every day, that's a big thing. If the child says, you know, I have a negative character flaw, and this year I'm going to work on improving that character flaw, then that benefit accrues much better. So that's why, if you're only, I don't mean only, if you're a daughter and you can't say Kaddish, don't feel like you're left out of being able to do something for the parent. You still can do plenty. And the male shouldn't feel he's absolved his obligation merely by going to synagogue and saying Kaddish. Okay, that's the point over here. Yeah?
If Gehenna is a maximum of 12 months, and Kaddish is being said for 12 months, what is the point then of doing deeds in the merit of or for the elevation of after the 12 months?
Because things can continue to accrue to your benefit. Okay. In other words, okay, you're leading us into another path over here. The other path is that the soul is always responsible for what the children have done. So if the child continues to do good things, so the parent will benefit more. Now, in the positive way, there's no more Gehenna. Well, okay, it's getting a little complex. Let's say the parent was a bad parent, really, and was a bad role model. And the child soaked it all in and is just as rotten as the parent was. As a matter of fact, even became more rotten than the parent, was a good student of the parent's rottenness. So now, you know, there's this idea where they say, you know, let him rest in peace. We don't believe in that idea. So let's say, okay, after a year, the father got hammered. Let's say he was a real rush. He got 12 months ahead of him. He says, okay, Baruch Hashem, the year's over. They said, not so fast. Now comes the Yortzeit. The Yortzeit, they say, okay, we got it, you know, that, no, not, let's say it's simpler. Comes Yom Kippur, right? Now the real way that holiday is called is Yom Kippurim, which is in the plural, Day of Atonements. Why is it Day of Atonements? Because not only do the people on planet Earth need atonement, but the people up in the heavens need atonement. Why? Because on Yom Kippur, Hashem judges everybody, and even if you've left this world, you're judged again for all the misbehaviors that are attributed to your role modeling. You follow? Mm-hmm. So now you're gonna be some more stuff going on over here. In other words, when you verbally abused your child constantly, and you beat, I'm giving extreme examples here, or when you kept telling a child that the most important thing in life is money, and the least important thing in life is Torah, and the least important thing in life is mitzvahs, and you become rich, and no matter what it takes, even if you have to stab people in the back. I'm just giving you an extreme example here, right? Just to make the point. I'm not suggesting anybody had parents like this. I'm just saying. So now this parent for the 12 months is going to get it, right? So now his child was a good student, and child is just like dad, and doing all these bad things. Well, who's that going to kick up to? The Father in heaven. So now he's going to get some more. More of reliving this Gehenna. Because it's dynamic. It's dynamic. Right? That's why Yaakov Avinu, when it says by Korach, and it describes his lineage, Korach the son of this one, the son of this, till Levi. And then it stops and doesn't go to Yaakov. Why does it go to Yaakov? Because the Torah is testifying that, yeah, Korach, a little bit of his bad, goes all the way back to Levi. And Levi's a little bit responsible. But the Torah says, but Yaakov had nothing to do with it. Yaakov was such a good role model that someone five generations down the line can accrue to what he did wrong. So therefore, it's never totally finished, as it were. And then, whatever Hashem has to do to fix things up again. So just because the year's up doesn't mean it's not over. But on the other hand, on the positive side, is all. That's why, for example, when Shaul contacted the witch to bring the soul of Shmuel back. So Shmuel was like in Gan Eden. He was in Gan Eden. All said, come here, we got to re-examine you. What? What's going on? And he was terrified. The soul was terrified. He asked Moshe Rabbeinu to come with him. Come with me and testify how great I was. And he thought he was being brought for a re-judgment. But then when he finds out, he's just brought to just say who's going to win the battle against the Philistines. So what'd you waste my time? Take me down in Hayden. Let me get out of here. But he was afraid, oh, maybe they're calling me, that maybe there's something that is not good for me as well. So that is part of the equation as well, all right? On the other hand, the soul, on its part, still is very much involved in the lives of the people that it left behind when the soul is in heaven. Especially the soul of a parent, especially continues to watch over the lives of their children and their grandchildren, and is very much involved in the positive. If they left children who really do amazing things. So I know, they have all these in school, they have all these chumash parties and these other parties, and the parents are inviting the grandparents to get nachas and that, but it's like much more real when it's up there. And when in Shemayim they see whatever, that their Jewish grandchild is marrying a nice Jewish girl and they're finding a nice Jewish home, and they really at this point, from their point of view, see what it really means, then their nachas is much greater than the nachas of the parents who are alive in this world. Because they really they're seeing the symphony. You understand what's happening? When you doing a mitzvah, you don't hear the symphony. You go up to Shemayim, they play it back for you, hear the symphony. Now you're up there, and now you see your kids playing the symphony. But you got the earphones on, and they don't. So it's theoretically, the grandparents who are no longer alive, let's say, have more nachas than the parents who are alive there, because the parents can only understand how good it is, while the people in the other world are much better off. So they get a lot of nachas. And unfortunately, if things don't go right, they don't get a lot of nachas. And they also are capable of interceding on behalf of their children or whoever up in Shemayim. And they can daven. They can definitely daven. And or anyone that this soul was connected to in a very strong way. Best friends will have such a connection. If one leaves, the world before the other. They're much involved. They see what's going on to a great extent. All right? However, and as I said, and they're, you know, in other words, a parent that loves you in this world as much as a parent, the best parent in the world, the most lovey-dovey parent in the world, loves their child, it's not going to compare at all to how much love they will feel when they're in the next world to the child. Because they know so much more now. Wow. They just know so much more and are so invested in that. And then you hear all kinds of stories, you know, where, you know, people in the Holocaust were running away and they didn't know where to go. And they say they heard their mother telling them to go here or that. It's not, you know, some of that is real, right? So that's what's going on. So you're still very much involved in what's going on in the world. Right. On the other hand, we have no idea what's going on up there. So it's sort of one way, sort of. In other words, we have no idea. We can just assume they're having nachas. We can't, it's not like we could see what's going on over there, but they could see what's going on over here. Okay, and there's no way we can communicate to them. And as a matter of fact, we're not allowed to try to, you know, go into the occult and try to communicate with them.
How much do they see?
They see a lot.
What a lot?
They see what's nogea to them, depending who they are. Let's say you're a tzaddik. Let's say you're Avram Avinu. You really see a lot because you got a lot of grandchildren. Let's say you're a tzaddik like Kveis. Like Rav Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev, I'm just throwing everybody. Yeah. So all the Hasidim in Berdichev and all their children, their grandchildren, he's very much involved and he's playing for them. That's why there's a big thing in a tzaddik's yahrzeit to make a big thing about it, because the tzaddik's energy is very focused in and to give blessings to them. Yeah. Yeah, Louis, you had a question?
Yeah, the only thing I'm a little at the if and it can go either way, whether it's a tzaddik or a rasha. Let's assume you're an ultimate tzaddik. You've really done everything. Your kids are ultimate tzaddiks, and one of your grandchildren, whoever it is, happened to turn down to Russia. Do you feel that same, even though you did not do anything to cause that? Or, in other words, is it only because of what you did, or is it just the
result? Even if you didn't do anything, even if it had nothing to do with you, you'll still feel bad. Let's say when he's alive. When he's alive, he has a grandchild who goes off to Derech. Wouldn't you assume grandfather would feel bad? Even if it's not his fault. No, it had nothing to do with it. He raised his children properly and his grandchildren. That's a great-grandchild. And one of the grandchildren didn't raise the great-grandchild so well. And even let's say grandfather says, you shouldn't do this. It's not a good idea. So it's not accruing to him that he was responsible, so he doesn't have to live. There's two points. There's living the pain of your actions and then seeing your descendants going off. You can't deny that that's a pain. So Avram Avinu, you know, the Avos, you know, are sad when they see their children not going on the right path. Even if they're not responsible for it, but you're still sad. And they're very, very much connected. And we should have...
But it's not the direct pain that you can...
But it's not like they taught someone to play bad music.
Right. Yeah,
now,
right.
If I taught someone to play bad music and they're playing bad music, now, I really feel responsible for it. If I was telling him to play good music and he'd be that, so then I just feel bad that that's what's happening. Okay, now we get to the topic you're all been buzzing about, which is really the least important of all of them. But everybody thinks it's so important. But so now, sometimes, so there could be a few things over here. Now, again, remember, God gave us all specific missions to accomplish. Specific, general, generic missions to be a regular Jew and do everything a Jew's supposed to do, no matter who you are. Every Jew's got to do all the mitzvahs and all that. Do Kiddush Hashem, right? And then you have a special job to do, whatever that is. And let's say you didn't do it. You just didn't do it. So when you go up to Shemayim, so they show you everything. So they show you, you know, what you did do and all that. And they say, but you know you were supposed to do this and this and that. He said, really? Yeah. And and he says, I didn't know that. And they said, no, you didn't. They kind of play the movie back in a way that you can really know you're really supposed to do it, but you pretend you didn't have to do it, but now you can't fool yourself. And then they say, oh, well, you didn't do the job. So there are times where they just say, okay, we're going to send you back down to do it again. And the soul goes back into another time, planet Earth. And it can happen in many ways, okay? That's one way this can happen. There's another way we'll leave it at that one way for now. So what will happen is, so either you did the job, you didn't do the job. And sometimes even they give you a choice. Would you like to go back and finish the job? Or would you like to just suffer the consequences of not getting your job done? Again, this is way beyond what we can understand. But either way, there are times that Hashem sees fit to bring the person back into this world to get the job done again. And the soul goes back into another body. You can say, how can one soul be in two bodies? So the answer is, souls are not measured the way we do with height, weight, length, and this. A soul is a spiritual entity and can be connected to many bodies. There's like a root soul and derivations of the soul, which get all kind of complicated. But so that soul can come back down and it can manifest itself in all different kinds of ways. And the simplistic way is, now you come back the next time and this time get the job done right. So therefore, it doesn't even go through any of the processes that we've talked about. It's not going into Gehenna, it's not going into Gan Eden, it's just say we're just sending you back down and this time get the job right. How and why that's decided, you leave it up to God. We don't make these decisions. Okay? And that may explain why certain people are particularly drawn to particular mitzvahs, so to speak, because deep down in their soul, it realizes I've come back this time to get the job done, and therefore it's more focused on the mitzvah, so to speak, of doing this. It's a very complex thing, and thank God only God has to worry about it. It doesn't make a difference. Here's the point. I know the next thing. Ooh, I wish I could find out where I'm in this game. So the answer is, it doesn't make a difference. It's not healthy to think about this so much. Leave it up to God to think about these things. I know there are people who go through these, I forgot what it's called, where they can hypnotize you. What's it called?
Soul regression
and all this. People want to know, what am I supposed to do in life? And you get a soul regression and you find out. And it's true. I mean, you could do it. Soul regression, and the last time around you were, let's say you're an Anglo-American here in Toronto, and they find out that 500 years ago you were Chinese, you know, and you're an Anglo-Canadian man, and then 500 years ago you're a Chinese woman, okay? But the soul doesn't matter. So there's gender equality with a soul, so to speak. So it could happen. So then, maybe you could find out what it is. But, you know, I don't recommend it. I don't recommend it because anybody who really is in touch of themselves, they know what their job is. They know what your job is. And the simplest way of knowing your job is know where your faults are. Everybody's created with faults, yes? Mm-hmm. Can everybody point to their faults?
Of course.
Yeah. Can we all say that we've done an amazing job and perfected ourselves?
No.
Do we know what we have to work on? Yes. Yeah. You know your job. You know your job. Now, that I'm oversimplifying, but it isn't that complicated. On the other hand, there's sometimes an opportunity comes to you that's a very special opportunity, and you got to say, this is coming my way. I got to do this job. That's all there is to it. And you can't lose by... You know, the worst can be is you did an extra job. You know? So, you know, I'll just give you an example. I don't know what I know a lot of my jobs are. I don't know how many jobs God gives. God can give you more than one job. He can give you 10 jobs, 20 jobs. He can give you a million jobs. It can be a lot of things. But I always say, if the opportunity is there, just take it if it's your job or it's not your job. Right? Why should you get involved in trying to help a Jew that nobody cares about? Whatever. Maybe that's also part of your job. So all kinds of... and generally speaking, the more you work on your midos to perfect your midos, the more those opportunities get into your radar. If, for example, let's say you don't work on your Midah of Chesed. Every Jew has to work on their Midah of Chesed. Let's say you're just not generally a Chesed person. You didn't really work on it. You do the least amount that the Torah says you have to do. So when Chesed opportunities come up, it's just not on your radar. And you're just not going to do it. So, but if you develop your mitos properly, then all of a sudden, a lot of things get into your radar. And then that can be your mission. So it's not something to overthink about it. And I'm debating if I should tell you the next line. The Arizal says that most of us are retreads, retreaded souls. There are almost no brand new souls around. And we've already are coming from other soul experiences. But it's not healthy to think about this. You should just think about the fact that I'm here right now, regardless of what the past was, and my job is to do whatever job that I have to do in this world. And that's why. So, but technically, it could be that God does not allow the soul yet to enter the world of souls, and therefore says to come back. And the great Hasidic masters will sometimes tell certain students, I don't know how they know who to tell, say, you know, when you're going to go to Shemaim, they're going to give you the choice. They give you the choice to go back or to suffer the consequences of Gehenna for you not finishing the mission. And they always say, don't ask to come back. If you can have a chance to just get your Gehenna and get through, because coming back to this world, the soul really doesn't enjoy it. And it's better not to do it. But, you know, this is beyond what we could talk about. So, therefore, it's not helpful in your Avodas Hashem to wonder. Forget about what you were in the past. You know what you are now. You know where you are now. And just do what you have to do now. That is this idea of the reincarnation of souls. Yeah?
Is there a difference between Jewish souls and non-Jewish souls?
Because Jewish souls, we're only talking about Jewish souls. Non-Jewish souls are not in this whole discussion. It's not part of the discussion at all.
A Jewish soul is then going to go back. If it comes back, it's going to go back and be a Jewish person.
Okay, so now you've got to another area that I don't want to get into. But now, there's another type of Gilgal. This was your standard Gilgal. Standard Gilgal means you go back into a body of a human being. Then we have the non-standard Gilgal, where and part of Gilgal is a punishment too, realize. If you didn't finish your job. Remember, the soul does not want to be on planet Earth. Does not want to be on planet Earth. It's far, very far away from Hashem. It didn't want to be there to begin with. But guys, if you're own good, you're going to go down and just be there for 70, 80 years. Okay, you finish. Oh, poor Hashem, I finished. I hope I don't have to go back to that world. And then for whatever reason, Hashem says, no, you're going to have to go back. I got to go back. Okay, go back. You still go back as a person. And you bedafka don't know what your past life was. Because if you do, then that's giving away the whole store. Right? If you knew, really, then what's the whole point? But then you can get a really terrible punishment. And your soul can come back not as a human. Your soul can come back in the form of an animal, a vegetable, or a mineral. Okay? And the reason for that is real suffering. Because you're not, sometimes you're so bad, that even Gehenna can't clean you up. So you need pre-treatment. You know, you got a bad stain, a really bad stain, you just can't put it in the laundry. It needs pre-treatment. You let it soak, right, in the Clorox space, whatever, for a couple hours before you're going to put it in the machine. So you're so bad, Gehenna ain't going to work yet. You're not ready for this. So now you've gone back into the world. Now you're coming back in the world. Now think about it. You're coming back in the world with your soul. Here's the difference. When you're transmigrated into a body, reincarnated in a body, whatever you want to call it, you don't know it at all. You can't, because then it takes away the whole thing. But when you're brought back into animal, vegetable, or mineral, the soul absolutely knows that it's sitting in a dog's body. It's sitting in a rock. It's sitting in a rose. And always it's suffering. Can you imagine? God forbid. Let's say, you know, there's these diseases now, the deteriorating diseases where the person's mind is sharper, they can't move their body. ALS. Mm-hmm. Right?
Or it's MS.
No, ALS. That's that Lou Gehrig's disease, right? Yeah. Is that ALS? Is that what's called ALS? So the mind is 100%, right? It just can't move the body. You know how frustrating that is? You can't do anything. They're talking. You can't talk. You can't do anything. You're totally aware of what's going on. You can't do anything. But at least you're in a human body. Now imagine you're in a dog's body. Now, and the soul knows what he is. The soul knows it's a soul. And it's now it's sitting in a dog's body. Not a very pretty situation.
Is that part of the cleaning process, Rabbi?
That's part of the repair. That's pre-treatment. Then, if you had enough of that, now you go to Gehenna. And try to clear things up. Again, I can't tell you why. Well, sometimes we could tell. So there's all kinds of stories. For example, the Zohar says people who speak Lashon Hara can come back as a dog. Which makes sense. Because what does a person do says Lashon Hara? They're just barking all day long. So you come back as a dog, barking, tell all the Lashon Hara you want now as a dog is barking. There's all kinds, yeah?
Rabbi, does it mean that all dogs and rocks have souls?
No. Let me explain. An animal does not have a divine soul. It's possible some animals who are totally animal, have ensconced within it a human soul that's trapped in it. We're not talking about all animals, just a few animals. And it's ensconced in the body. So the animal's still an animal. The animal acts like a regular animal. But the body, the soul of the departed has just entered in the body. It's like in a straitjacket. Okay, and may influence the dog's behavior a little bit. Right? Sometimes your punishment is you have to come back as all three. I mean, you start off as a mineral, then you go, there's crazy stories. They bring your soul into a mineral, and then from the mineral you go to the vegetable, and then from the vegetable you go to the animal, or vice versa, depending on how terrible you were. And those things have to happen. You know, they tell a very famous story, I'll just say it briefly, with Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld. This happened around the 1900s. So there used to be a person in Yerushalayim. His job was to wake up all the Jews. They didn't have alarm clocks. So at 5 in the morning, he knocked on every door, told them to go to shul. Okay, and he did that 7 days a week, even on Shabbos. So now there was one non-Haredi person who lived in the old city, and he didn't appreciate this guy knocking at 6 o'clock in the morning, waking up people for Shabbos morning davening when he didn't daven. So he didn't like it. So he said, well, then I'm going to fix him. So what does he do? He collects a whole bunch of a big bucket of disgusting liquid, okay, refuse and all this kind of stuff. He says, when the guy walks by this Saturday morning, I'm going to dump it on him. That'll quiet him forever. So it is. The guy walks by, he says, time to get up. And the guy douses him with smelly. So, okay, and it's Shabbos. He can't do much. So the guy had a smelly Shabbos. Okay, that night, the man who spilled the water mysteriously died from a heart. This is a true story. Mysteriously died from a heart attack. Okay. Next morning, the guy is doing his round, and then he's buried in Yerushalayim. He's buried that night, so family's sitting shiva. The next morning, the guy's doing his job, knocking on the doors. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, comes this black dog, and starts barking and starts following him along that hour route that he goes around the old city. And it's just dogs just following him. Okay, and then when he finished knocking, the dog ran away. Next day, he goes to wake everybody, and this black dog comes out of nowhere and starts following him around again. 2 days, 3 days. He says, something's mysterious. He goes to Rabbi Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld. So he says, well, like, what's going on over here? He says, what a coincidence. This black dog's following me. So tomorrow, call him by the name of the guy who died and see what happens. So the next day, the dog comes by, and he calls him, whatever, Chaim Yankel, what are you doing here? Right? Calls the dog goes berserk. Cry! He's going up the wall. So he tells that to Rabbi Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld. So after the Shiva is over, Yosef Chaim is on the dog every day is just following him. So after the Shiva is over, Yosef Chaim calls the widow and the children from Shiva and said, I need to talk to you. And he tells them, sorry to tell you, your husband really did a very bad thing to this fellow. And now he's the dog. He's the dog. So what are you going to do? So he prescribed a program of a tikkun for the soul. And a number of things had to be done. And one of the things that had to be done is that the family had a promise that they and their children and grandchildren, since the father wanted to stop people from coming to shul, your job is to keep people in shul. And we know in Yerushalayim in those days, the nights were very cold. And to go around to all the base medrashes and bring hot tea to all the people who are studying Torah, to continue to study Torah. And he says, and I will learn Mishnayos to elevate his soul, blah, 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 blah. And then he tells the guy who's waking up people, tomorrow you'll do the following. So they all agree to this. And the next day, the dog comes by, and the guy's heard says, Rabbi Yosef Chaim has exonerated you, and now leave the dog. And goes, and jumps out, and they never see him again. Until today, there are people who, from this family, who give hot tea to people. And say, now, you know, you're going to say it's a spooky story, but it's Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonneville. I mean, you're talking about normal people over tzaddikim. So you see, this is what happens. So sometimes, you know, you might notice, and I know a lot of people want to attribute amazing qualities to their pets and all this. So, like, generally speaking, just assume it's what a pet does and nothing more. But okay, occasionally, you know, if the cat like keeps opening up a sitter and starts looking in over there, you may want to talk to a bigger rabbi than me, because that's beyond my pay scale to deal with those kinds of things. But those things can definitely happen. But you have to know it's a tremendous punishment for this person to go through these things. It's a tremendous punishment. That's why the Kabbalists tell us that part of the service of offering animals in the temple, part of it is that some people who are really rotten, they reincarnate into a sheep or into a bull. And then he gets raised up and he's brought for, and then there's a person who did a sin just like that guy did, and had to bring a korban, and that guy, I guess, never did bring a korban, because he was a real Russia. He never did tshuva, so they have to pick a sheep or a bull for the korban chata. So who are they picking? They're picking Willie, you know, who's in the bull's thing. And believe me, the Kohanim knew, the Kohanim in the basement, they really were spiritual fellows. You were, what are those Kohanim doing all day long? You know, that they're only working 2 weeks a year. They're probably learning Kabbalah, all this kinds of stuff. They're learning the whole Torah. And sometimes when they see a certain bull, they say, this is not a regular bull. This is a real guy coming for his tikkun. So they're talking to the bull too, and there are all kinds of things going on over there. And they shech the bull, and now he's made his mark, and he is ready to go. They say from the Baal Shem Tov, when he would do his tish on Shabbos, and the Hasidim were eating the kugel, and he saw one chassid left over a piece of kugel, and the Rebbe Baal Shem Tov said, why aren't you finishing the kugel? He said, I'm not hungry. He says, finish it. It's good for somebody. Sometimes the guy, the Baal Shem Tov knew that little piece of kugel was a reincarnated soul, had to be ingested at a Shabbos meal to be part of Shabbos, and he would make his tikkun. Okay, it's just not for us to live our lives this way, but I'm just telling you this part of the equation of what happens over here. Yeah?
Your wife.
Yeah?
I just want to ask a simple question. Sometimes I have people who talk to me and they'll say things. When my mother died, there was a rainbow. And now, whenever, like, it's my chasana, I saw a rainbow, and then I saw a rainbow, like all their major events.
I know people saying, you know, people saying they see rainbows since my mother died. That I don't know. I don't really. I haven't seen anything about that. I'm not saying not, but I don't think I've seen anything about that. Then there's finally one other thing that's even worse than that, and that is called, some don't even merit the Gilgal. They don't even merit the Gilgal. Like, you're really bad. And it's called the Kaf HaKela, which literally means the slingshot. the slingshot. We'll tell you a good story next week about the slingshot because it's in the next class. But anyway, what happens is the soul is told, you know, you're so bad, you can't go to Gehenna. You're so bad, you can't even come back to planet Earth. All you could do is roam the cosmos. The soul, the naked soul, just wanders.
That's Halloween.
That's probably where Halloween came from. It wanders. Now, as it wanders as a soul, now a soul, when it's under the throne of glory by Hashem, it's nice and protected. When it's in your body, it's nice and protected. When it's just flying around, the destructive angels are going after him and is forever chasing him and beating the living daylights out of that soul. And that's where you then stumble into sometimes that wandering soul. And it's and we don't know how long it has to be this way. Hashem determines how long it has to be. Sometimes they're looking for a refuge. So where do they find it? They just enter a human being's body. And that's where you get the idea of a dibuk. Where our real story, I'll tell you next week a story about that because it pertains to the next point I want to say. But where it's like, let's say you're here, okay, there's a person here, whatever, and then just another soul just comes inside of you. And when that happens, it wreaks havoc because you really, your body can only take one soul at a time. So when another soul happens, it causes all kinds of physical ailments, distortions. The person usually will be very ill or unconscious or not able to speak or muted. All this not bizarre things will happen. And then if you people know how to talk to the dibuk, you'll hear voices coming out of the person's insides without the person moving their voice. It's a whole story for another time, but that's what also comes from that. So those are all kinds of things if you're not good enough to go to Gehenna.
Ventriloquist?
What?
Ventriloquist?
That is not... No, ventriloquist just throws his voice. You're talking, there is a real soul went into the person. Now, again, that causes such a disequilibrium because one body can only take one soul. And a foreign invader has come in. So usually it manifests in the person like choking and they vomit and they can't take what's going on over here. So then you need a Kabbalist. This, I think, where I think the exorcist idea comes from. And there's real stories. We're talking about stories with the Chafetz Chaim over here. We're not talking about, Chafetz Chaim. You can't get more yeshivish and non-Kabbalistic than the Chafetz Chaim. Chafetz Chaim exorcised dibuks. Rabbi Chana Wasserman was involved in exercising. Besides all the Hasidic rebbes, so I was their standard fare. But I'm just saying that existed. It certainly existed because and they wanted to stay. Why did they go there? Because then the damaging angels can't touch them in there. So why did they go? But again, this is all not for our. It doesn't help our Yiddishkeit. It just makes it good for interesting class. Yeah.
Someone asked, I think it was you, about ghosts.
Okay,
but if soul just came in the room, it didn't go into a body.
But that's not how people look at ghosts. They're looking at this ghost. There's this mass that's floating around. That's not a human. That's not that. It's not relevant. I'm sorry.
No.
Yeah. Go ahead.
If God is deciding, okay, there's a Gabriel, and if it has to be a human body, a human form.
Yes.
So if it is a Jewish soul, it will come as a Jewish soul, or it could also be a non-Jewish?
It could be a non-Jewish soul as a punishment, too. Could be.
How is he going to do all that?
Leave it up to God. Leave it. It's better for me not to know these answers. You don't want to know these answers.
So why would Hashem allow a Russian soul to have such to be in such state where they can create more harm to people?
I've got in the next handout. I got a story that's going to answer your question. It's going to answer it. I'll just say, leave one more thing. Sometimes God, has a sense of humor. I mean, I don't have a sense of humor.
He does.
So sometimes you see like husbands and wives, a husband and wife, they mamish, whatever. Let's say the wife is mamish tormenting the husband. It's like mamish tormenting the husband, making the husband's life miserable. So there was a story I forgot it was with which Rebbe, or was the Arizal? I don't remember. I could forget the Arizal. Somebody, the guy goes to his wife, to the Rebbe, says, "My wife is terrible. She's a witch." Now, this is going like hundreds of years ago. People just didn't get divorced in those days. "She's terrible. Whatever I want, she just makes my life miserable. What should I do, Rebbe? Should I divorce her?" Rebbe thinks. He says, "She's your tikkun." What does that mean? "Well, both of you are Gilguls. And in the past time, you were married before, and you were terrible to your wife. You were terrible to her. You were abusive for all these things. So when you come up, when you came up Shemaim hundreds of years ago, you came up and God says, you're a rotten stinker. And then the wife came, I feel so sorry for you. And remember, when you come back, when you leave this world, there's a lot more I didn't tell you. Certain, if people did things bad to you, you're still upset about it. Let's say somebody killed a person. A Jewish guy gets murdered by another Jew. He goes up to Shemaim. He's just saying, oh, everything's fine. I said, he's upset that the guy killed him. And he can shake the heavens to do all kinds of things. He could say to God, I'm making a request that this guy should have this problem. And God's got to listen to him because, after all, he's a victim. And there's all kinds of stories about this. The soul of Navos that was able to trick Achav to do things. There's a lot to be said. We'll talk more about this in future weeks. You come back, there's lots of feelings over there. Certain feelings are feelings. Even if you're dead, you still have these. The soul feels, really feels. And it can have nasty feelings too. So anyway, so the Rebbe says, listen, you were the rotten, stinking husband before. And you came up, and Hashem said, yeah, you're a terrible husband. The wife was victimized, and she felt bad. So I said, now we're going to fix it up. We're going to come back down now. Now the wife is going to victimize you, and that's going to clean the whole slate. So you know what? Just take it. Take it. This is the tikkun. If you just live your life and accept this treatment, that'll be the tikkun. So when you come back to it. So he comes home back to the wife. And the wife, of course, is doing terrible things to him. And he's smiling. The wife insults him, says, yes, dear, I love you. The wife, you know, doesn't make him supper. Oh, I love the way you don't make supper. Like, it's like mamish. And the wife's going, oh, what's going on over here? Well, usually you're yelling back at me. I'm not telling. So she makes him really upset. She says, you got to tell me. I'm not, got to tell me. You are my tikkun. He goes back to the Rebbe a couple weeks later. He says, Rebbe, things are much worse now. He says, what's the matter? He tells the whole story. He says, a tikkun. You know what she did when I told her she's my tikkun? You know what she did, that terrible woman? You know what she did? She started being nice to me. She's so wicked, she won't even be wicked to me, because she'll be my tikkun. That's how terrible she is. So Rebbe said, you know what? The time for the tikkun ended, and now you can live happily ever after. Okay, so that's how far these things can go. So, but again, this is not, don't try to figure this out. Okay, now we go to stage four. Now, this is going to mesh with something else now. So just as the individual soul passed through three stages, which is preparing for its mission before, the mission itself, and the subsequent phase, so too, we got to merge now your steps as a soul with the world's. The world has three stages. There's three stages of that. There's one world, so to speak, that precedes the physical reality. In other words, that's the source of the world's existence before it came into being. Then comes the era that we understand as Olam Hazeh, this world, for the 5,780 years plus. They're in this world. And then comes the next stage where humanity as a whole has completed its whole mission. There's a universal mission of the Jewish people with the ultimate goal is to make the world the ultimate dwelling place for Hashem. Not just the little temple, the entire planet Earth becomes the temple of God. That's when we call the universal reward. And that is the real official name of Olam Haba. when the world as we know it, planet Earth as we know it, will be the permanent, or almost permanent, Olam Haba. So now we have to discriminate between that and Gan Eden. So it's very important. This is very important now. There's a major difference between the soul's individual reward, world of reward in Gan Eden that we've discussed, stage three, and the universal reward of the world to come in stage four. Okay, Gan Eden that we've been discussing all along is a spiritual world. When you die, you go to the world of the souls. You go to Gan Eden or Gehenna, whatever you're going to. It is just souls without bodies. That's for a long time. The world to come is a physical world inhabited by souls with physical bodies, although they're much upgraded models. The physical body we will have in Olam Haba will be a much upgraded model. I can't give you a precise description, but it will be something to the extent that right now you don't sense that your body is a garment to your soul. It is, but you don't sense it. You sense that your body is really looms larger than your soul even. In the Olam Haba, it'll be absolutely clear to everyone that your body is not more than the shirt you're wearing. And you will give it much less significance. It'll be like the junior partner. Now, if you save a body and a soul and ask you, who do you feel is the senior partner, who's the junior partner? I know what you're going to say, but you honestly feel that the body is the senior partner and the soul is the junior partner. It's hard for you, even though you know it's not that way, but you kind of feel it is that way. In the next world, it'll be absolutely clear. There's no way you're going to make a mistake and think that your body is the main thing. Your body will clearly be the junior partner. We could, let's say if you had a translucent body, and your soul was illuminating through your body. Would you for once think that the body is the main thing? So we will have those kinds of bodies. The rabbis don't go into more than this, so I can't tell you more. But in the world to come, the physical reality will be so perfect, it will house the divine reality of your soul in such a way that it's clear that the soul is eminently big and the body is adjunct to it. It's connected to it, and clearly seen as an appendage to the soul. Okay, that clearly will be. So while in today's imperfect world, the soul experiences reward only after it departs from the body, from the physical life. In this perfect world, it's harder for your soul to appreciate the good spiritual things until you go to the world of souls. Into world to come, the body, the soul will completely enjoy everything reality of being with Hashem, and the body will be very happy to be an appendage to it and will also really appreciate this and doesn't have all the nasty demands of feed me on time and all these other things. And the Nevi'im spoke of a time when all who died will be restored to life, their bodies will regenerate, and their souls restored to their bodies. Various psukim in Yeshaya that say death will be removed forever, the world will be filled with knowledge of God, etc., etc. And that will end what we call the era of achievement up to that point. There'll be no veil of physicality anymore to conceal the truth of Hashem. It'll be absolutely clear. And look at this. Goodness and godliness will cease to be something we do and achieve, like we did in this world, or even grow in the world of souls. But it'll be who we are, and that will be experience of goodness will be absolute. That is the Olam Haba, the ultimate Olam Haba we're talking about. That's stage four, totally reunited. And again, how good will the feeling be? Definitely correlates to how you lived your life in this world. Depending on your Olam Haza experience, doing the will of Hashem, And just like we said, in the world of souls, you will enjoy this reality. The soul will enjoy or suffer the consequences, the natural consequence of its behavior. And things get fixed up a lot in the soul world, where the soul really gets stronger and the negative parts of one's life are removed. But then when that new soul comes back into that rejuvenated body, there'll be many, many different levels. There'll be no evil. You'll have no Yetzirah at all. But if you were a Jew who didn't do a lot, so you'll have a smaller amount of enjoyment. You did a lot more, you'll have a lot more enjoyment, right? And everyone will understand the perfection of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that time will last 1,000 years. Okay? It'll last 1,000 years. Which, well... Which that
doesn't matter.
Then after that, we don't know. After that, all of reality will meld itself into God's reality.
All seven.
And whatever that means, which is way beyond. So now what we still have to talk about next week is there's still one stage in between all that, and this is called Mashiach. Mashiach is to get sandwiched in somewhere between human beings. When this world of the 6,000 years of achievement somehow comes to a certain kind of end, then is Olam Haba, there's got to be a transition time, and that's the times of Mashiach. So that's what we're going to talk about next week. And there's two stages of the Messianic era. And then we'll go back to the soul and exactly what the permanent realities of the soul are going to be. So stay tuned next week.